251-343-0106 if you would like to weigh in on anything. Hit us up on that text line. Text works really well this morning, believe it or not, so hit us up. Anyway, moving right along here, joining us now on the program, I'm very pleased to bring on my next guest, former State Representative Paul DeMarco. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Jeff, to you and your listeners. Hope you are well today.
So I guess there's a lot for us to talk about here, just on the state level. First off, now you're kind of our go-to guy on this one. The best test case of why critical race theory is something that our policymakers in education need to take seriously. It's not just, as many on the Democrat side will tell you, this is a solution looking for a problem. But in Mount Brook earlier, I guess last month, you know, there was a lot of the ADL, whether it was critical race theory or something kind of antithetical to the views of a lot of Alabamians, mainstream views, that is. You know, they were trying to impose diversity training or sensitivity training or something like that. This was a real threat in our public schools in Alabama.
It is. And we can't just take for granted because folks say, oh, it's not allowed in the schools, that it's not happening anyway, or that teachers aren't trying to have reading. I was talking to actually a school board member at a school locally up here in Jefferson County, and they said what some of the teachers are doing is they're providing these reading lists that nobody else is looking at. And if you look at the reading list, it's got some of these books that are doing some of the goals of the, however you want to define critical race theory, which is that, you know, this country is systemically racist, that based on your skin color, that you're a racist, or that you have created a situation that puts somebody else in a bad situation based on the way you were born. And so there may not be a, quote, curriculum, or it may not be allowed by the state, but you still have some educators doing it anyway. And that's why the legislature has to address it, the state school board has to address it, and local school boards need to make it clear that if somebody does this, they're in violation of school policy.
Yeah, because I don't think we could depend on local school systems necessarily here. It has to be done at the state level, right?
Well, you're exactly right. We just can't count on local school boards. That's why we have to have the parents be the line, the tip of the spear to hold their school systems accountable to what's going on in their school systems. But yes, the state school board should make it clear, and they have a school board meeting coming up on August the 12th, and there's discussion about a resolution. And yes, the school board should absolutely pass a resolution making it crystal clear in no way should any of this be allowed, and all of this should be completely transparent what is being provided either to teachers or what's being provided to students. Completely transparent. It's got to be required by the state board, school board, and it's got to be required by the Alabama legislature.
Yeah, because otherwise, this does go on, and I think in our public schools more than people realize. And it all kind of started with the whole 1619 project, and that was, you know, a revisionist sort of history. I meant to suit a political ideology, I think, but that you know, just because we don't encounter it necessarily doesn't mean it's going on.
No. And again, what you have going on, this is the time schools are going back in August and all these required reading lists for students. And if you have books on there that are violating this policy, they're pushing some of these agendas with this reading list, they're just kind of going around and doing what they want to do anyway, regardless of what's required or banned by the state or the school system. That's why state school system board has to address it, and so does the legislature.
Yeah, these reading lists are a big part of that. You know, for a lot of you, you get a summer reading list, and you have to come back and have read at least two or three of these books. And a lot of times, it's just it's these ideological books that I guess people that go into this the K-12 education tend to, you know, sometimes, especially in these liberal arts fields, they tend to swing left a lot of times.
Oh, you know, like I said, it was with the Anti-Defamation League and what they were doing in Mount Brook and some of their recommendations to teachers on what to provide. And if you read it, you'll say, wait a second here. This is what's being provided to teachers to guide their education of kids. Go and read it. Go online and read it. You'll say, wait a second here. That's why the state's got to step in if local school systems aren't going to address this.
I mean, even my niece, she's a student in the Hoover City Schools. Her reading list, like Trevor Noah and I don't know. Those are fine to be included, but on the other side of that, they're not going to put Ann Coulter or Rush Limbaugh or whatever their books on there. So I just think that it is, if anything, one-sided, to say the least.
Your point is, yes, it's one-sided, but also when you start requiring a student, you have to read this or else, this is going to affect your grade in this class, then it's a real problem that you have a teacher pushing an agenda and a student's academic record is going to be affected by a requirement of a teacher who is pushing some sort of this social justice. Then that's a real problem, and that's why the state's got to step in and the legislature's got to step in.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. We mostly think of, when we think of political bias in academia at the higher education level. But I remember, even when I was a high school kid, learning the virtues of Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. Now, that was my AP history class in 11th grade. And it turned out on my AP history test, that was a question. And an 11th grader should have no idea who Margaret Sanger is. But I was able to ace that portion of the AP test. But it always makes me think back to those days and that, like, wow, that, you know, that there really was a left of center bias in K through 12 schools.
No, the parents have been paying attention to it for years. But now I think where we are in this country, this is why the parents have been stepping back up and saying, wait a second. We're revisiting because we're tired of this being pushed on our kids, and it's not what we want from our school systems.
And look, everything else in our schools that leaves much, there's a lot of places where there's room for improvement in Alabama public schools. I don't think we're spending a lot of time on this. Meanwhile, we're sending kids from the third graders that can't read at the third grade level to the fourth grade. Mathematics, science, all of these things that are staples of a K through 12 curriculum are just being left, and we're having to spend a lot of time on the social justice warrioring efforts. It seems problematic to me.
Oh, absolutely, and a lot of us have talked about that. We said we're in Alabama, where we've got some great public schools. We've got some great public schools. I know I've got a lot of great public schools up here in Jefferson County. There's some great public schools around the state, but as a whole, we don't. And so the amount of time and effort, and I was really disappointed the State School Board Association sending a letter to the state school board, really delving into this and saying, okay, now wait a second. Where are you when it comes to where we are in the rankings? And is this a real reflection of the parents out there? I mean, that's where the states, the local school boards are supposed to be a reflection of the parents. And if the state school board association, if the school board association is doing something different, they're not really reflecting what the parents I'm hearing from, where they want their school boards and their school superintendents to be when it comes to these issues.
Joined by Paul DeMarco, former state legislator and now the chairman of the Jefferson County Republican Party here on the program. Paul, the new, Chris England, our mutual friend from Tuscaloosa, now the head of the Democratic Party in Alabama, he wants a big-time shakeup, pardons and paroles and the ADOC. Look, I get it with Jeff Dunn, but the Board of Pardons and Paroles, he wants all these leadership changes. What is going on? The prison discussion is such a big part of what we talk about here on this program. But the Democrats in this state have a very, very different approach to dealing with all of this.
Jeff, not 2 years ago, we were, or 3 years ago, dealing with the problems that we had with the parole board that was out of control, that it was failing the public. It was allowing hundreds of violent felons out on the streets, and it, and unfortunately, tragically, disgracefully, it took the murder of three individuals in Marshall County for the state to act. And thank goodness the governor and the attorney general and the legislature did act and change the rules and strengthen the Board of Pardons and Paroles. So now we have a board that is not that is looking at each situation on a fact basis, and is not releasing all these felons. And so, what does the Democratic leadership do? We need to change it. We need to change it. The leadership of the Board of Pardons and Paroles. The governor and legislative leaders need to stand up, support the chair of that board, Lee Gwaltney, and what they're doing. And I want you to just think about this, Jeff. We had, why do we want to go back to where we were before? This was a huge scandal in the state when we had this individual get out and murder three people. We had all kinds of folks get out, and it's not like the prisons are full of shoplifters. You know, they said it's over 80% of our prisons have violent criminals. So we need to support the current leadership of the Board of Pardons and Paroles, who's doing their job.
Well, you know, the ideological approach of the left in this state, there's a lot of things there's not any low-level drug offenders or shoplifters in Alabama prisons. That is indeed not the case, but that's sort of that seems to be the premise they're operating off of. And it seems like it would behoove those looking to change things on that scale, on that level, or at least if you don't think that that's the way things ought to go, that either way to make that case, that we're not getting a true sense of, you know, who really these violent offenders are in Alabama prisons, I think.
Well, if they want to address the corrections issue, look at the prisons, but don't look at the Board of Pardons and Paroles as your solution to that problem, because they're not supposed to look at an inmate who a violent inmate who should not be released and say, well, because we have this federal lawsuit, because we may have these issues going on at the prisons, we're going to release them anyway to the public. No, that's not the way you address that issue. That is not the solution to any problems you may have with the correction system. We must applaud what's going on at the Board of Pardons and Paroles for the way they're handling each situation. And again, I want to applaud the leadership with Lee Gwaltney, who has earned the reputation as a professional. She's fair to all the parties, both the families of the offenders and those of the crime victims. And that's what we were lacking at the Board of Pardons and Paroles. When you were letting these folks out, the rules and were not being followed the way who was supposed to be released, when they were supposed to be released.
Right.
And now that we finally got the situation fixed, we've got the leadership of the Democratic Party saying, let's force her out. Let's force her out and go and replace her with somebody who's going to release more felons, which will go right back to the situation we were in 2018 before the legislature and the governor fix the problem with our state Board of Pardons and Paroles.
I mean, I just don't get it, Paul. It just seems like it's a tone-deaf approach, and who is it for? And you hear all these discussions about how great the Democratic Party is going to be compared to what it was under Nancy Worley, and how Chris England is more level-headed guy, but this approach seems to be out of the mainstream.
And thus, with his call on her removal, I want to call on the governor and the legislative leadership to support this Board of Pardons and Paroles and support the chair we have and the job they're doing. That they're doing a professional job in looking at each and every inmate and deciding who can who is eligible for parole and who is not. the criticism, I want you to think about what this criticism is. They're not letting enough folks go from jail. And because we have this problem with the corrections, they need to let more people go.
Right.
That happened before, and it took the governor and the attorney general and the legislature to fix a broken system.
Well, it's just
it
like,
sounds like the Democratic leadership is saying, let's go back to the system we had before.
It's like, who is that for? But I don't know. Paul, we're up against a break here real quick. Folks want to find you online, check you out, tell them where to look.
Yeah, you can follow Paul DeMarco on different radio stations, newspapers, and political blogs around the state of Alabama. Thank you, Jeff.
Paul, thanks for your time. We'll talk again soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Paul DeMarco, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.